Score, 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 score. Let's go, Islanders. Score, 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 score. From unknown parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the hip and this is the lib.
Yes, good evening, everybody in Hip and Lib Nation. All Jet fans out there, ready with me. One, two, three, let's go, Gino. We're ready for Gino. We want Gino right. Right now, in Gino we trust, in Gino we trust.
Heaven on earth for Jets, Mets, and Islander fans. Yes, 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 in New York City.
All competing for the worst team in the worst team in New York right now. Who wants that title? Who wants to assume that title of worst team in New York?
They're all fighting very hard to achieve that honor at this moment in time.
Islanders, Jets, Giants, all duking it out. Well, I guess the Rangers.
Oh, and just to add salt to the wound, Justin Turner home run in the postseason of Jake Arrieta. Yes.
But aren't we all rooting for the Cubs? Because everybody in America is.
I'll just say, former Met Justin Turner.
To rub salt in the wound for Mets fans. But aren't we all Cubs fans? They're America's darlings. Oh, I want the Cubs to win so badly. They haven't won in so many years. Oh.
No, but they're the favorite team. So I don't know if probably wants that, but I don't know if the neutral fan subscribes to that.
Yeah, it's true. It's not very H to root for the Cubs right now. It's a lot more H to root for I don't know. Who's the most favorite team, right?
So, we are a New York Sports Islander podcast. I am the Hip, and this is the Lip, and we're not, you know, we're talking about the Cubs-Giants playoff game 3 in L.A. because it's happening right now as we speak. And because the New York Islanders just concluded their fourth game of the season, yes, we, since our last show, four games, their first four games of the year, and the Islanders are a robust 1-3 to start the year.
Robust.
We will get into that a little bit later. We will get into some more baseball playoffs. But before that, we will do our football teams.
The Islanders have been anything but robust. So I'll just throw that in there.
So the at least one New York football team, I should say downstate, right? Not the Buffalo Bills. We don't really cover them in depth. But
they are the best team in New York right now. Best football team in New York.
They are. The New York football Giants are 100 after defeating the Baltimore Ravens last week in a tight 127-23. And the New York Jets, well, as we said weeks ago, they could be 1-5 after 6. Here we are, 1-5 after 6. So the Giants took the game at home against the Ravens. Low scoring to begin with, some big plays later on. Giants right now.
Yeah. Oops, sorry.
How are you feeling about your Giants?
My Giants, yes. Sorry. A little technical difficulty. So that Giants game, they did play last Sunday, didn't they? Well, they are now 3-3 after pulling out a victory. Which you thought was not going to come after, and I'll get this in first because
on your face, that is.
Yes, right on my face. And I got to say, now, one of the themes for this NFL weekend, you've seen it written about, you've seen it talked about, is the penalty flag. We're seeing so much yellow now, NFL fans. You saw it yesterday during the Jet game. And we'll get to Sean McDonough, the play-by-play guy for Monday Night Football on ESPN, his little comment during the game about penalties and affecting gameplay and NFL ratings, et cetera. So I guess we'll touch on that when we do the Jets. But in all my years of watching football, I do have a pretty decent memory, and you know I can recall some obscure, irrelevant, stupid crap. I cannot recall though a worse pass interference call than the one that I saw on Sunday. Now I don't know if you saw it, Mr. Hip, if you were watching the game, if you saw the call, if you know what I'm referring to. But this call could have cost the Giants the game, and it looked like it may have. After the Ravens would take a 23-20 lead by scoring a touchdown, my guy Terrence West would punch it in from the 1 or 2 yard line late in the fourth quarter. But it was set up, that touchdown, by pass interference call I've ever seen in my life. It was a call against Dominique Rogers-Cromartie. He was covering, I think it may have been Aiken down the sidelines there. It was a deep pass by Joe Flacco. Rogers Cromartie had absolute perfect position. I mean, it was textbook cornerback play. If you're a football coach, if you're a peewee Pop Warner football coach and you're teaching your kids how to play that position, you pull up that video and you say, ignore the flag, ignore the moron referee, who's one of the worst referees in the game, I might add, Jeff Triplett. He is absolutely, he may be the worst referee in the NFL. He is atrocious. He's had so many just bad calls, and you know his crew's had so many bad moments in different games. But anyway, but they call pass interference on the play. Textbook, just perfect coverage by Dominic Rogers Cromartie on the play. Had Aiken covered perfectly, made a play on the ball, didn't at all interfere with them. They gets the flag, and then the Ravens would score. And then Mr. Odell Beckham, who had two long touchdown passes in this game, you saw him break out in a very big way, ended up with 8 catches for 222 yards, and again, two long touchdowns. He would score a 66-yard touchdown at the end of the game, which would ultimately be the game-winning score. And I guess we'll get to his antics, at least just touch on it, because you know, we'll see how what kind of effect that his behavior is going to have on the team going forward. But, you know, an amazing play by Beckham there. On a fourth down in one play, I might add, he took a little slant pass from, ran a little slant pattern. Eli Manning made a good pass to him. It should have been a first down. You know, any other wide receiver probably is tackled there, but because he ran a precise route, because his cuts are so precise and they're so quick and they're so, and he's so agile and he's so athletic, he was able to, basically make the two defenders on the play knock into each other. He takes off. Nobody's catching him at that point once he gets in the open field. Scores a touchdown, game over. Off comes the helmet, of course, and that would lead to a 15-yard unsportsmanlike penalty, which I guess we'll kind of cram that in when we talk about his antics and all the other nonsense. But, game-winning touchdown. They needed every bit of his magnificence in this game, and he was magnificent. He was the player that we have come to expect, and he was as big a reason the Giants won that game as anybody. So. Well, what did you think, Mr. Pepp?
Yeah, I'm watching. I didn't get to see the play because I was participating in pregame Islanders activities. The Islanders home opener was 6 p.m. Sunday.
We'll have to get into that a little bit later about your experience at the Barclays.
I pulled it up online, and yeah, that's. Basically, Cromartie is just playing. He's basically in better position to catch it.
Oh,
he's in position that the receiver should be in at the goal line, and he doesn't lay a finger on Aiken. Aiken's like actually trying to bat the pass away.
And I thought it may have been. I thought it may have been offensive pass interference. I thought it was going to be offensive. I said, "There's no way it's on Cromartie."
Look, they know when calls are blown. I mean, they every week, the NFL puts together a video montage basically of all the bad calls that were made, and they send them to all the officials to review so that they see what went wrong. It's not like they turn the other way.
It's an epidemic, though. They still don't know what a catch is. They still don't know what pass interference is. We see so many ridiculous pass interference calls every week, apparently, and I didn't see it.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
He was interfered with blatantly to a point where, he was almost tackled and they didn't call it. So they don't even know what pass interference is, the NFL. They don't know what a catch is. They still haven't figured it out in 100 years of football. They still don't know what a damn catch is, let alone a pass interference call. I mean, it was so horrific. It was so egregious. And because of the fact that it's a spot foul, of course, unlike college where it's only 15 yards, it could have cost the Giants the game. And, they score a touchdown on that drive, the Ravens. And, there's a couple minutes to go in the game and the Giants lose. That's the story. And the NFL was thrilled that Odell Beckham took that pass to the house, because if he doesn't, the story is the penalty and the awful call that it was, because it was beyond egregious. Honestly, that referee, Triplett, should be suspended. He should be suspended, if not for the rest of the year, let alone like a week or two. He should be suspended the rest of the year. That's how horrific that
was. He didn't throw the flag. He didn't throw the flag, but you're saying he should overrule the guy that threw it?
It's his crew. That entire crew should be suspended. You have to. You can't call a penalty on that play. I'm sorry. I don't care. You know who threw the. I don't care. It was the back judge or the. I don't care who threw the damn flag.
What they should have done was they should have called. The guy that threw it should have sucked it up and said, "My bad. We're picking up the flag."
Well, that's when they congregate. Officials congregate. It's inexcusable.
That's the error. At the professional level, they should. You would think. That a guy that back judge who threw that flag coached on officiating at college intramurals, but I was coached by an instructor who did college football games, so I learned quite a bit about officiating football games. And first of all, it's not easy. It is. I'm not trying to make excuses for these guys. These are professionals.
No.
They're getting paid.
I understand. Look, it's subjective. I get that. You're going to have questionable. You can always have questionable calls. Any game, you'll have questionable calls. But it gets to a point where it's just where you see a penalty called on something and you just say, you know what? I don't know the rule then. I just don't know the rule. I guess it just means that you're not allowed to play defense. Maybe that they're just trying to cultivate an environment where defensive backs just can't play defense. And we want the wide receivers to have free reign in the secondary where, you know, they're just making, you know, 50 and 60 and 70 yard catches. Because that's what we want. We're trying to breed that, you know, breed more offense, and we don't want the defense. I mean, if you don't, then just, you know, maybe have them play 11 on 5 or something. Only 5 defensive players,
you know,
or 7. You could have four down linemen and 3 linebackers or something.
Isn't it fair to say, though, the play has been pretty bad in general in the NFL this year?
Yeah, we've talked about that. And we have
not,
talked.
Despite I don't know what the stats show as far as like number of pass interference calls to date versus other years, but even if the NFL's effort to lessen the impact of the defense is not helping, apparently, because it's, you know, aside from like Drew Brees at home, you really can't count on any offense to be clicking at all cylinders at any moment. That's like the only offense that seems to work.
Yeah, anyway. The play this year, I mean, you know, it's been an ongoing theme, you know, just the media, you know, just how really mediocre the play has been, or, you know, just how below average it's been. And, you know, the teams, and, you know, how many good teams do you have in the league right now? You know, we've talked about it. I mean, the Patriots are, you could say, are really the only good team in the AFC. I mean, you know, I want to say Denver, I guess, but you know, Denver has their problems offensively. You know, it's really astounding just how much mediocrity you have in that league right now, and how subpar the level of play has been. So, you know, up until
and just as far as Beckham goes, is it really hard to just accept probably what's the reality with him, and that's you have to take the good with the bad. I mean, this guy, how old is he? He's 23 years old. He, you know, I think. It's that aggression that you see with his antics that leads. I think that's part and parcel with his good play. I think it's the same. You know, it's not so easy to compartmentalize these two.
We're
talking about a human being. Who's 23 years old. I don't think it's that simple to just, you know, there are professionals. After a while, they get it, and they can, you know, they can be all ramped up for the play, and then once the play's over, they can just walk slowly back to the huddle like nothing ever happened, and channel their emotions that way. I mean, this is like a young Dez Bryant type personality. I mean, we've gone through this before. There's so many, you know, you see this pattern for young receivers. This is not a unique thing. And well, I mean, what are you going to do? What can they do? I mean,
he wants to go make out with the net. You know, yeah. And look, he was brilliant. He was. Excuse me. He was sensational in that game on Sunday, and they needed every bit of his 222 yards.
Yes.
I mean, the offense was stagnant for most of the first half, and then, you know, they finally changed up a bit. They He'll start running, you know, kind of like a modified no-huddle offense. You know, Eli gets into a little bit of a rhythm. The running game went nowhere. You know, the running game was, you know, was non-existent in that game on Sunday, but they were finally able to get Eli into a rhythm with his receivers. And, you know, Beckham made that, you know, 75-yard touchdown pass. You know, they finally breathed some life into that offense. And then obviously, you know, the game-winning touchdown, which again, I don't think any wide receiver in the league has taken that to the house. I think he's the only one, maybe Julio Jones, you know, one of the that you can say maybe would have taken that pass to the house.
Adam Humphries, maybe.
Yeah, of course, yes. Maybe the amazing Kenny Britt or Cam Meredith now. But I mean, yes,
Quick,
he is
obviously
a phenomenal player. I love watching him because he is. I have not seen a receiver of his, of at least the way he plays the game. You know, just the. You can throw it up, you know, you feel like he's going to, I mean, his hands this year have been a little questionable. He's dropped a couple passes, but he's just so explosive. You just feel like you throw it to him, he's going to catch anything that's, you know, even remotely close to him. You know, if he gets a step on you in the secondary, forget it, he's gone. And, you know, again, they needed every bit of it on Sunday, but here's the problem. I don't, you know, you want to go make out with the net. Look, it's stupid, and you have to nip it in the bud at some point, because if it gets out of hand where he just feels he can have free reign and do anything he wants, then it really will hurt the team. But he almost hurt the team anyway, because he took a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty by taking his damn helmet off. And you know that they are going to flag that every time. That's been a rule now, whether you think it's stupid or ridiculous or the NFL doesn't allow you to celebrate. It's been a rule for 10 or 15 years. They're going to call it every time, and they always do. You can't be stupid like that and do that, because it would have hurt, because it almost did hurt the team. I mean, Baltimore was able to drive the ball down the field, and they had a ball in the end zone for a chance to win the game.
Yeah, as frustrated as you might be, I don't think there's anything the Giants can do about it.
Oh,
what are they going to do?
Hold
them out for the first series next week?
I disagree with that.
What are they
again
gonna do?
What can they do? I think the Giants are afraid of him because of how good he is, and because they know that they have to tiptoe around him and walk a fine. But you can't let, you have to, at some point you have to rein it in. You can't let him walk all over you like that and just do whatever he wants.
So what do you do?
You have to then draw a line and say, if you cross it, if we're going to tell you that, you know, the antics have to stop, that you have to know the rule book. You have to be in control of your emotions. And if you hurt the team, then we're going to bench you. And we're going to tell you, you're going to sit
quarter. Bench you. See how the junior guy that stepped up, who miraculously scored a touchdown, does in my place, and see how benching does.
Well,
I mean, he can literally say that. By the way, who is that guy?
Of course, but any superstar player can say that. I mean, but not every superstar player acts that way. I mean, look at we're gonna talk about the Islanders. Look at
John
Tavares.
Yeah, but I don't know if threatening. Yeah, but my point is, threatening with a benching like that just doesn't seem like it's combative.
But
as opposed to,
you don't have to accept
it. I think he needs tough love. I think he needs a guy in his face.
That's but they haven't done that though either. Nobody's gotten in his face. You know, they're moving that in that direction, but
I think a coach has to get in his face and like be hard.
I agree. I don't disagree with you. And I'm not saying this has to be like a threat.
But saying we're going to bench you, I don't like that. That combative type of.
Well, look, there's a way of handling personalities. Like the Giants, I don't know Odell Beckham. The coaching staff knows. I mean, they have to know how to handle him. And they have to know what the correct steps are to rein this in. And again, if
maybe not. I mean, it doesn't – player. This happens where they
– Look, it's not just the team. I mean, the media breeds this too. I mean, his self-aggrandizing.
They love it.
They do love it. And that's the – and, you know, Gary Myers, who I think is a good NFL columnist, he writes to the Daily News. I mean, he's asking about – instead of talking about the play, the touchdown, this question was, the net at the end of the game. Would you propose to the net? You were making out with the net there. Would you propose to it? Oh, what are the kids going to look like? I mean, why is that necessary? You know, if he wants to make a little funny quip or something like, oh yeah, the net nine made up, that's fine. You're allowed
because they get more hits on their websites. Come on.
But I'm not reading an article for that. I want to know about the play. I want to know about the game. And
you're not the average fan.
I'd be astounded if people are watching Odell Beckham just to see what his celebration is going to be if he scores a touchdown, instead of actually watching him perform
field. No, you don't get it's what they want to read on Monday and Tuesday during their work week. Like, they want to read what are these interesting storylines. You know, they saw the game. They can only see the replay.
How is that a storyline, though? How is him just with this ridiculous celebration? How is that a storyline? The storyline would have been his penalty if they lose. That would have been a storyline. Would it not have been?
Maybe it was.
The Giants lose, it would have been either the pass interference call, so the NFL was so happy that Beckham scored there, or if they lose, then you know maybe the NFL deflects it. Oh, how about Beckham's penalty though? It wasn't the referee; it was they would have been right. I mean, because
how ironic is it that you know we say winning you know cures all ills, and imagine if the Giants had lost, how much more intense this discussion would be.
Oh
the fact
God,
that they won and it's intentionally instigating you on this because it's because I like having this back and forth. I think that's what makes it interesting.
This is what you know engages us about sports is you know, and it's not is it always the play on the field? No, we like talking about the players and you know their personalities and oh this one's comment and what this one did. I mean yes, it is part of it of course, and that's what engages a lot of people you know within the sports is the personalities and the sound bites and all that, and you know I understand. I'm not saying he shouldn't have a personality, Beckham. I'm not saying that he should be dull like his coach, you know, who's mastered chapter 4 of coaching for dummies, you know, spouting cliches. I'm not saying he has to do that or he has to be Derek Jeter and have boring, you know, interviews where he just gives, you know, bland vanilla answers, or even John Tavares, again, who I referenced just a few minutes ago as somebody who's so, you know, who's very professional and buttoned up, but, you know, doesn't really have much of a personality or charisma either. And, you know, that's just him. That's just the way he is, which
I think it's time to move on. I think we've kind of exhausted it for now.
We'll see if there's more
to revisit next week. The Giants travel to London, I believe.
Yes.
Game against
Wake
the Rams.
Up next week and set your alarms, everybody, because they had to play at least like 5 games in London this year. Oh, yes, we're going to have a team in London in a few years. So set your alarms, 9:30 game.
9:30 start. It's an away game for the Giants, so that the Giants don't lose a game at MetLife this year.
Oh yeah, amazing that they would take a game away from LA. That shocks me that the NFL that they just moved there. I mean, I know they take games from Jacksonville and Miami because they have bad. They don't care about those cities, but LA they just moved there. I know they're building that. That's a little strange.
Maybe the idea is to have people in London. Feel a direct appeal to LA to root for them specifically because it's Los Angeles. One of the, you know, between Los Angeles and, you know, you're in London, you don't know. It's like me and you going to, you know, London to watch a premier soccer matchup between Manchester and I don't know.
Chelsea.
Yeah. Whatever. The two best teams, it's not a perfect analogy, but you hear like the two biggest cities, you know, in the United States.
Obviously, I mean, the Giants are one of the more well-known NFL franchises. You know, LA, big, you know.
So, you know, people hear LA. Ooh, LA. I don't know. All right.
Possible.
Well, now let's get to the Jets here, and I mean,
oh, God.
you will be struggling to take any positive out of. I mean, last night's game was just a complete disaster from start to finish.
Pathetic.
Really? I mean, it may be one. It may be the worst performance from any team in any game so far this year.
It was that bad.
Bottom three. I mean, it was that bad. You know, even like the one drive where the Jets, you know, had their like 14 play drive and they get it to the 20. And of course I knew it was going to end in an interception, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick just making an ill-advised pass, trying to find Brandon Marshall.
Was it 21-3 at that game at that point?
I think so. Yeah.
I think it was in the second. I know it was in the second half. I think it was 21.
Yeah. I believe it was 21-3 at that point. And you know, that was the death blow. I mean, not that you really thought the Jets would make a comeback, but if they have,
no, but it's a two-score game, you know, and there was still time left. So, I mean, if they score there, you know, not that you think they're going to come back and win, you know, it's still the odds are against them. But I mean, look, it's just fitting that it ends with another red zone interception.
But Fitzpatrick has, you know, since week 17 of last year, now he's been the more average quarterback that this journeyman player has been historically known for. I mean, instead of this magical record-setting passing yard season the half of the Jets last year. I just think that everything clicked right last year. I say it over and over again. And I think he's just, you know, regressed to his mean. That's really what you're getting. I mean, I don't know what Jet fans really expected from him. I guess they expected him to continue that magic. Unfortunately, the Jets are painfully, you know, had no depth of wide receiver after Decker and Marshall. Quincy Anunua has not stepped up at all. He was a good third receiver, but doesn't appear to fit the role that a second receiver requires in this offense, especially when you don't throw any passes to your tight ends. Matt Forte has done nothing since week two, basically. I think he scored three touchdowns against the Bills. And
yeah, the offensive line, though, has been
He's gone into hiding, and Bilal Powell is a good complimentary back. He's not a bell cow. So Forte, they gave him 30 carries in that game against the Bills. And now
Since that game, he has not done anything. But, you know,
he hasn't done anything.
It's a lack of a commitment to the running game, and it's also bad offensive line play.
You go down the line here. Then on the other side of the ball, obviously the secondary continues to get shredded. It wasn't that terrible last night, actually, for the secondary as far as letting up big plays. Now, there were a lot of penalties, and that's another story.
Yeah, Buster Skrine, I think he just committed another pass interference.
But again,
penalties for him. Two of them were declined, but six in all. And there was one sequence. There was one sequence I noticed when I was in and out. I mean, it was just an awful football game. I mean, it's not like Arizona, you know, dominated them. You're like, Arizona looks great.
They just had a few drives where they methodically took it down the field, got help with some penalties, and David Johnson punched it in. I mean, he did have that one really long run.
Yeah, and that set the tone for the game, I thought. I thought the Jets, you know, just giving up that, it was 58 yards, like almost untouched. I mean, the tackling on that play was poor. You know, they missed David Harris yesterday. I mean, David Harris had been, you know, such a staple in that defense for so long now. I mean, he's been with the team. He's got to be, 7 or 8 years, you know, a mainstay in that linebacking core. You know, the guy from Michigan, Mr. David Harris, and, you know, he was on the field yesterday, and they felt the effects of it. I mean, their tackling yesterday, and their defense overall was bad, but, I mean, their tackling was abysmal.
They host Baltimore on Sunday, you know, a game that they could win, but this team didn't show any life last night.
No, they quit. They quit in that game yesterday, I thought.
I think what's interesting is how Todd Bowles last night came out. You know, they asked him, obviously, who's going to – because Geno came in for a series and fumbled the ball and threw an interception on a single series.
Yeah, well, that's Geno.
And, you know, of course, the media asking Bowles immediately, you know, who's going to start next week. And last night he said Fitzpatrick's our starter. Now this morning or this afternoon during the press conference, he said, the incumbents are, you know, we always say the incumbents immediately after the game. But
we have to have our staff meetings, our coaches meetings.
I mean, of course, he could have said that last night while he was saying who the incumbent was. He could have said at the same time, we have meetings next week to decide what we're going to do going forward. But he didn't say that last night. He said it today, which is telling because he could have said it last night.
Yeah, and it tells you that the strings are being pulled, and you know that those strings, it's not just coming from the GM and the front office. I mean, it's coming from the owner's box. That's where it's coming from. You know, Woody Johnson is weighing in on this, and you know, but here's the fodder, here's the talk radio and newspaper fodder for everybody, because everybody loves a quarterback controversy and a debate, especially when a team is going badly. Who should play quarterback? Should they yank the starter and put in the backup? And I don't know what your thoughts on this. I say no. I think it would be wrong to bench Fitzpatrick right now. I think if you put in Geno, look, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Geno, he is what he is. You know what he is. He is at best a backup quarterback in this league. I don't care if he thinks he's a starter and he's, you know, throwing up his arms yesterday and, you know, he looks like he's throwing a temper tantrum on the sideline when the team was going bad before he was put in the game. And, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, Geno, how exactly, you know, what resume do you have that you can, you know, stand there on the sidelines and throw up your arms, you know, like, oh, I'm waiting in the wings here. Get me in. You know, I'm so much better than this guy. Honestly, I think the Jets, considering everything that they went through with Fitzpatrick in the offseason, the contract negotiations and the last-minute signing and, you know, just the, you know, them committing to him, if you committed to him in the offseason and, you know, you committed to him, you know, for this season to bring him back, then you have to stick with him because the season's not over yet. The season at 1-5, I know it feels like it's over to many Jet fans. Oh, the team looks awful. I have no reason to think they're going to make the playoffs. You know, just throw in a backup quarterback and throw in this guy and let's just see what we have and mail it in and we're thinking about the draft next year. You're not done at 1-5. You don't have to be done at 1-5. They can still, if they win this week at home against Baltimore. You have Cleveland. You have Miami. You know, they yes, they have the Pats twice, but
the Patriots twice, yes.
Yeah. I knew what you said.
I said you got the Patriots twice, yes.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, yes, they have the Pats twice, but they don't have to give up on the season. Look, if the team wants to quit on the season, then we know, you know, what this team was about and, you know, that it was not destined to do anything. And, you know, they may as well just blow it up at the end of the year. And it may include getting rid of everybody, including the coach. But I think if they go to Geno right now, it sends a message that we feel we have no chance this season. We're just going to, you know, try out things, and we're going to play backups, and we're going to see what this guy has and that guy has. And, you know, especially considering how veteran-laden this team is, you think those veterans are going to be, you know, motivated and compelled to give it their all every game when they know the coaching staff feels like they've given up on the season? You think Brandon Marshall is going to go out there and want to, you know, especially considering it feels like he's always playing hurt, you think he's going to want to risk himself, especially, you know, if he's playing for a new contract, they may have a new team next year. I think it would be a terrible message to send to that locker room, to the team, and regardless of what the fans say. And I can't believe the fans would want Geno. This is the guy that they booed incessantly every time he stepped on the field in the preseason. So I think at a minimum you have to give Fitzpatrick one more game. At minimum, one more game. But if they lose on Sunday at home to average Baltimore Ravens, I don't know. You reevaluate it, but I think it would be a mistake to start Geno next week, and that's my two cents. As the Jet fan, the season ticket holder. What do you think, season ticket holder?
Do you have your Ethernet into your computer? Because it's getting very choppy.
Oh yeah, I do.
You do? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It sounds very choppy.
Maybe I'll disconnect and see if that works. Actually. No. Did you hear? So I posed the question.
It's very hard. It's almost like it's a rushed. It's almost like a chipmunk speak that's choppy.
Yeah. All right. Well, I unhooked it. So I posed the question. What do you think?
You know what? Try to read just quick. While I answer the question, reconnect to the feed.
All right.
Just exit out and reconnect. So while the lift does that, I'm inclined to say, yes, stick with Fitzpatrick because the season is not over at 1-5. The one point that the lift made that I don't know if I am fully on board with is he said, you know what Geno Smith is. You're back.
I am back. All right. I do know what Geno Smith is.
Much better. Okay. Right. So I am inclined to agree. You stick with Fitzpat. I'm inclined to agree. You stick with Fitzpatrick. The season is not over. I don't know. You made a statement that said we know what Geno Smith is. And I don't know if we fully know the answer to that. I'm not saying that means that he starts next week. But maybe you've seen enough of him to know. I don't know if I have. I feel like maybe it's because it's short-term memory and he hasn't started a game in a while. At least I don't remember when he would have recently remember how awful of plays he made. But I guess the part of me says at least there is some chance, maybe remotely, that he can show better than what Fitzpatrick is going to continue to play like this.
And he's been terrible. I agree.
I don't know how much better Fitzpatrick can get yet. Can he play? Look, he played really well. I go back to that Buffalo game, but now we're minus Decker. I mean, that's the Fitzpatrick you want to see week in and week out. I'm not saying you put in Geno Smith, but I wonder if there's a shift in the. I know you go to the veteran talk and what they'll have the locker room's going to take it. You wonder if those guys are how much of them are still behind Fitzpatrick and to what extent. I don't know because he's been really bad. So are the players in the locker room thinking to themselves or out loud? You know, maybe Fitzpatrick. This is his. You know, he's only signed through this year. What's the point of sticking with this guy? We thought that maybe his Fitzmagic would continue from last year minus week 17, and it clearly hasn't. And maybe it's time to find out. No, I'm not saying now's the time. Maybe in a few weeks if they continue to – if Fitzpatrick – like if he has one or two more, you know, really bad games, then I think something's going to happen.
Oh, not yeah, I'm not week. Saying that this can continue. Look, this can't continue, and you'll see, Gino, if, you know, if he goes out and plays a miserable game next week at home against Baltimore, yeah. I think you can
that's
have
probably
you know,
I think he gets one more game.
Argument.
I think he gets one more game.
I think he should. I think, you know, especially at home against the, you know, a, you know, an average Baltimore team that, you know, doesn't have a great secondary, but you know, it's more than Fitzpatrick though. I mean, the offensive line has been bad. The play calling, you know, I don't like to get into the specific, but I mean, just the offensive, you know, game plan, it just feels like has been disjointed, and you know, they don't commit to a running game. You brought in Forte, but you know, they haven't tried to establish him at all in the last couple weeks. Decker was a big loss. Decker, we talked about Decker's loss. That's a big loss. Everybody, you know, thinks of Marshall first. Like, oh, he's number one. You know, Decker, okay, you know, we can, you know, get by if he goes down because you can have somebody step up as long as you have Marshall. You're seeing how he was at offense last year.
Decker was put on IR because of a shoulder injury. He actually had hip surgery today. That will
really?
Keep
oh,
him out.
That.
He had hip surgery that I believe
I didn't hear
will...
that. I didn't hear that.
It will preclude him from getting the shoulder surgery for like 6 months.
Really?
So now his availability going into next year is in question.
I think you can say that Eric Decker will not be contributing to this team ever. Maybe you may have seen him in Jets uniform for the last time. I think if that's the case.
Yeah. But, so that happened, that we learned of today. Well, look, well, I'll be there on Sunday, and, you know, it's going to be a hostile crowd, just frustrated crowd, I'm sure. They're going to, you know, be waiting any moment to boo,
oh, yeah.
Boo the team.
Are they going to chant for Geno, though? I mean, Bryce Petty's not coming in. So, Jet fans, I want Bryce Petty. He's not coming in. He just got back to practice the last, like, a week ago. He's not playing on Sunday. There is zero chance Bryce Petty's getting in the game on Sunday. So, put that out of your
if
mind.
If Fitzpatrick throws two bad interceptions in the first half, then who knows? Then the cheers will come.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not saying that, you know, that they should leave him in there the rest of the season if he's, you know, playing this horrifically. But it's not all on him. The offensive line has been terrible too.
Look, the Jets may lose. He may have an okay game. They'll stick with him. But if he's just like downright awful, like making the stupid, just throw the damn ball away. Don't force it. Just throw the damn ball away.
You know what? We'll see if this team has any pride. And I think that's what I want to say that on Sunday. Does this team have any pride? Are they going to fight, you know, and try and salvage and save theirs? It's not all just Fitzpatrick. It's everybody. I mean, you know, the defensive line that vaunted defense. Now, Richardson had a good game yesterday, although they were lining up in the linebacker spot. What were they doing? Well, I don't understand why he's playing linebacker. He's a defensive lineman. He's a interior lineman. What are they doing there? You know, it's like they're trying to do anything they can to generate a pass rush. Or to, you know, make something click. It's like it's almost like they have their defensive scheme is like non-existent. It's just like throw guys out there and hope that it all falls into place. Like, what are they doing? Their secondary, they obviously need better play from. Revis looks like he may be on his last legs. And let's just see if this team, you know, puts up a last stand here on Sunday or if they mail it in. And look, if they mail it in, I think you can kiss the season goodbye if they lose again on Sunday and they look as bad as they did on Monday, but, you know, yesterday.
All right. So let's move on to some hockey.
All right.
So the New York Islanders season is underway. Four games in the books already.
Yeah, their season's over too. Their season's over too. Back up the truck. They stink.
Well, two more games and two more losses and they'll have the same record as the Jets.
Yeah, maybe they'll get there. Maybe they'll get the five losses before the Jets even play on Sunday. Because they play Friday and then I think Saturday actually, yeah. So
I was at the only game that the Islanders emerged victorious, so that was a pleasant.
So tell us about your experience at the home opener on Sunday. Yeah, so you had Baby H with you, did you not?
Took my son to the game. He was able to get in free of charge because he's under 34 inches.
measured him.
They don't measure it, but it's stated on the website.
34 really? It's not even like under two or like under three. It's 34. They measure the kid.
It's both 2.5 years. Two years under 2 years old and 34 inches. MetLife. It's, you know what's interesting about MetLife is for Jets games, it's the same policy.
But?
Giants games, every human being requires a ticket. Doesn't matter how old you are.
What about pregnant women? Are pregnant women charged for their fetus?
Go take the Roe v. Wade standard.
Whoops. He's not really a person. No, they're not really a person yet.
So we got blessed with incredible seats. My wife's cousin, he gets great seats to sporting events all the time. We had the sixth row across from the benches. Is that considered the near side when you're I guess because we're on the broadcaster side. So with the sixth row.
Okay, so you're facing the benches.
Right, between the red face-off circle and the blue line. Where we were.
Wow.
So we had the Islanders' offensive zones in the first and third periods.
Nice. Damn good seats.
Yep. Very good seats. And, you know, what was so funny throughout the game, and I just kept laughing to myself, is there must have been five people within the vicinity of where we were sitting. You know, and who knows about the entire building. Bailey sucks. You suck, Bailey. Like, the only player getting singled out on the Islanders in a negative light was Bailey. No question. Oh, and they have to hear, when you're that close, they have to hear.
Well, they were yelling, they were like chanting, like, you know, and screaming, Bailey sucks? Is that what that's
just
what they
yelling,
were
yelling, you suck, Bailey, like after he, flubbed a pass or missed a shot opportunity and just didn't get a good shot off, like near the net or something. Like, you suck, Bailey, like just loud. And I'm thinking to myself, man, they probably can hear that. It's close enough. I mean, you're right there. It's not Nassau Coliseum volume. I mean, it just doesn't exist at Barclays. It's not going to get to those levels, I don't think.
Well, how was the crowd? Was it it was announced to sell out, but they were empty seats, I heard.
There were empty seats in those upper deck corner sections that are like a upside down triangle shape.
Yeah.
Those
obstructed seats. Oh, you can only see 3/4 of the ice.
Yeah, these are the obstructed seats that are behind the net on the side with the SUV, the car, you know, that's occupying some prime seating spots.
The official mascot is back, gentlemen, in the SUV.
Well, you know, technically, our seats are kind of obstructed because you can't see the corner of the on the other side of the ice on the opposite goal on where the goal is, but like in the near side corner, you really can't see what's going on there from our seats because we're so close to the ice and that's so tucked away that really unless you stand up, but you know, I just found myself looking at the screen when the puck was buried all the way over there.
Yeah,
which is interesting for seats that, you know, it's pretty close to the pretty right up there. So but it was just ironic that you hear this all game, and then of course who scores the game winner in overtime to give the Islanders their first win of the year. I just thought, I'm not saying Bailey's a good player, I'm just saying it was kind of funny. And in this game, Bailey was on the first line with Tavares and
yes
and
he
Lack,
was yep
which I thought was a change. It was Ladd, Tavares, Chimera.
Yep.
The first couple games. And then interestingly, Clutterbuck was kind of mixed in with Tavares later on in the game in the third period. In fact, it was Clutterbuck setting up Tavares with a kick pass because Clutterbuck's stick was broken right in front of the net, and he kicked it to Tavares, who punched it in to give the Islanders a 2-1 lead in the third period. You know, Capuano, who supposedly is pretty, you know, the opposite of fluid, I guess, with lines in games, appeared to be changing up a bit there. Howie Rose was in attendance at the game. You know, that there's a McDonald's section. It's like the college. I don't know if it's the college section or what they call it. But Howie Rose was up there for a part of it where they did a cheer and like a thank you, Howie, on the screen.
So he got a nice ovation.
He did. He got a nice ovation. I caught at the end of the game. I saw our hip and the lip friend, Eric Hornick.
Hey, you saw the skinny. Mr. Skinny.
He was busy. I didn't get to say hi, but we were sitting so close to where the booth is. Our exit ramp was right by where the play-by-play booth is, and he was right next to, I can't remember the guy's name, the new play-by-play announcer.
Brendan Burke.
Yeah, it's not a knock on him. I just forgot his name. Brendan Burke. And Hornick was sitting right next to him as they were getting ready for the post game, I guess, because it was probably a commercial break following the overtime goal and when their post game started. And he had a billboard up, a whiteboard, where Hornick was holding it up and showing the three stars of the game. He wrote them downward, and he was showing it to Brendan Burke. Is it Brendan or Brandon?
Brendan, I think.
Sorry, it got cut off on you.
Hey, Ray. Brendan. Yep, Brendan Burke.
Brendan.
Yep.
Like Brendan Shanahan.
Yep.
Okay.
Hey, Ray.
Yeah, so he was there and, looked like he was in his element. So I'm sure it's working out fine transitioning from Howie to Brendan. But, I didn't see the Boomer and Carton grill, actually. I was looking for that, and I wonder if it's gone.
Really?
I went where we normally would go when you walk in to the right and you walk on the main level, and maybe we passed it. I didn't see it, but I was looking for it. And
you didn't get a Botchigaloop burger? Is that what you're saying?
I did not. So I didn't research it after if it's still what the story is on that, but maybe since Matty Martz left, Boomer's ties to the Islanders are, pretty much, are donezo.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, he's like, all right, get it out.
So, all right, enough about that. I saw the one win, and it was nice. They had a 2-1 lead, and the Ducks tied it late in the third period. I think when they had their extra man.
Well, we were all so surprised. Oh, look at our shocked faces when that happened. Yes.
And Josh Bailey made a nice deke to score the goal.
Oh, it was a sick goal. I don't use that word. Usually when I use that word, it's in a different context when I'm using that word to describe Bailey. But that was a really nice goal.
Yeah.
Very skillful.
So, look, but that, they were 0-2 going into that game. They lost at MSG. They lost at Washington 2-1 against Washington. Kind of a lifeless game, for me from watching it. And then tonight they blew it. So, 1-3.
They did. They are 1-3. They are not a good 1-3 either. If there is such thing, they are not looking that good right now. They've had. You were at the game on Sunday. I mean, they were dominant in the first period.
They look pretty good.
Yeah, they had it. They were, and that's a good Anaheim team. I mean, they looked dominant at times in that first period. Had that on along with the football and then that second period, they didn't really have any flow because there were so many penalties. That's one positive, at least. Their penalty killing has looked good again. Their penalty killing last year was for the most part good, and it's looked pretty good again, despite no Franz this year, who was a big part of their penalty kill last year and has been for years. They blow it. Yeah, like you said, they have the lead in the third period. They blow it again. A couple soft goals in the third period by Halak. They were able to pull it out in overtime. And as you said, Bailey, the winner. And with people that were sitting around you, were they cheering for Bailey? Then, yeah, Bailey, we forgive you. We take it all back.
There was one guy that was saying he's not so bad, like as other people were saying he sucks.
So bad after all.
There were people that were just laughing when other – there were people laughing.
When he scored the goal, were they laughing when he scored the goal? That'd be kind of H.
Yes. Kind of was, because we all knew that we all heard Bailey sucks, like the whole game. Even Janelle, what's so bad about Bailey? She I didn't have to bring it up. Like, who's Bailey? Why? What's so bad about it? And she found it funny when he Bailey scored.
I wish instead of cheering when he scored, everybody starts laughing. Like, oh God, of course, there's Bailey scoring.
And then on tonight's broadcast, I felt like they kept showing him. Like, he's like getting singled out, like not negatively necessarily, but he's getting a lot of attention.
I think that's a mandate from Garth. I think he's trying to, you know, because all you're hearing now is all these positive, wonderful things about Bailey. Like, you know, all of a sudden the Islanders have found this emerging, you know, player that's going to play with Tavares in the first line. And, oh, Bailey, he's coming into his own. Well, no, not really there, Butchie. And I know Garth is forcing you probably to say that because Garth's trying to save
his job.
So, and you're right. He is getting, it seems like, a little more focused on during these games, you know, at least, you know, over the first few games of the year. And look, Bailey's not playing that much, you know, even on the message. Oh, Bailey looks so much better. Let's not go crazy there about Bailey's play. Look, Bailey, and I destroy Bailey too. We, you know, if any, you know, listeners to our program know that I've destroyed Bailey on numerous occasions, and I still think it's an insult that he's on the team. But, you know, right now he's a stopgap on Tavares' line because there's no better option. You know, there really is legitimately no better option to play on his right side right now. You know, Ladd's going to be there for the foreseeable future, going to try and let them develop chemistry. And there's just nobody else to play on, you know, there right now.
Why can't they do Clutterbuck?
I mean, they're just not going to do it. You know, I'm not saying Clutterbuck's a bad option. I think Clutterbuck would blend.
But you're saying there's no better option. So that means you're saying Clutterbuck is not a better option.
In the coach's mind, there's no better option.
Screw the coach. I'm saying what we think.
Like I said, I think Clutterbuck would be fine on that line.
Would be not fine. Would he be a better option?
I think it's worth a try. Clutterbuck's game. Here's what I would say. Tavares, they need a guy, in my opinion, that can carry the puck. Ladd doesn't do that. And Tavares, he can, but he's not at his best when he's doing that. He's better when you can establish possession in the offensive zone and then let him work down low, work the puck, you know, behind the net, work it out along the boards. You need somebody that can carry the puck through the neutral zone, gain the zone. Clutterbuck, I don't know if he's necessarily the guy to fit that bill. So do I think, you know, he can complement Tavares? Do I think that Clutterbuck is good enough to, you know, complement whoever's line mates are and what their, you know, what their strengths and weaknesses are? Yes. Do I think he's good in his own zone and he can help that line in that regard? Yes. Do I think he can, you know, help by, you know, starting a forecheck and if they can establish possession that way? Yes. So I think from that standpoint, I think he can definitely mesh well with Tavares. You know, again, is he the best option? Maybe not. But do I think that you know, he can work there? Possibly. But is the coach going to do it? No, the coach is not going to do it.
Bringing the puck through the neutral zone is the key to you. That's what it sounds like.
Carrying the puck into the and gaining zone entry, that's the biggest. I think that's the biggest asset that a winger that since Ladd doesn't do it, I think Tavares' other winger, I think that would be the best asset. And I think that's why we all thought Parenteau, who's good at doing that, who's good at, you know, establishing possession in the offensive zone, who's good at gaining the zone and establishing possession, that's why we all thought he was brought back to play with Tavares for that reason. And then when he was cut, that's why we were all just scratching our heads like, what is going on here?
Is he playing now? Is he getting minutes in New Jersey?
Yeah, he's playing. He's playing for the Devils. Yeah, I think he's playing all their games so far. He hasn't been a healthy scratch yet. He has a goal, I know. I think he may have an assist, so he may have at least 2 points.
See, I thought maybe, like, you know, he was injured or, you know, just looked finished or washed up. But getting picked up by another team and producing a goal already speaks to the contrary. So, I don't know.
Apparently, I guess he was quoted as saying, "Want to prove the Islanders wrong," is what he was quoted as saying. Yeah. Yeah. But here's the question now. He was cut because of the rookies. They've now alternated, you know, and Bavillier it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's absurd. He scored his first NHL goal tonight, Bavillier. We've only seen Barzal in the one game.
Barzal, how about Barzal? Did you?
Yeah, well, you said you watched the game, right?
Back to back penalties.
And one that you never, ever see, playing the puck from the penalty box.
I didn't even know that was a rule because I've never seen it. where he stuck his stick out of the penalty box. He didn't even come out of the penalty box.
He didn't even have one skater. He was still completely in the penalty box. And when he played that back, he just kind of like, you know, held it along. There it was as he getting off the ice. And he was probably, oh, there's the puck. Oh, there it goes. And then he gets back on the ice with 2 seconds. Arm in the air, up you. There, up you, back in the box. And you see his, and they cut to his mom, of course, and his sister, I guess, a couple of times.
That was hysterical.
So Austin Matthews' mother and father get to watch him as an 18-year-old score four, or 19, I guess, score four goals, whereas the Barzals get to see their son commit three penalties. He almost matched the amount of goals that Matthews scored.
Oh, my God.
There's three penalties. So, yeah, not exactly a memorable NHL debut for Barzal.
You know what was painful again about the loss of Washington was both goals were scored by a guy that had six goals last year and played almost the full season.
Yeah, Winnick. Yeah, he's a fourth-line player.
That felt painful. A guy with not much an offensive skill set scoring both goals.
Yeah, and Hamannik and Letty now.
You know, if it's going to be Ovechkin or Oshie, whatever, fine. You let it go. Like, it's their best players. They got you. But a guy like that?
Yeah. Yeah, Winnick is not exactly known for his scoring touch or his scoring prowess, and that's not why he's playing. You know, he's a fourth-line winger for the Capitals to, you know, play 10 minutes a game, you know, maybe play – you know, strong defensive hockey, whatever. But yeah, and you know, Hamannik blew a tire on that, you know, skate gave out, you know, on that second goal by that game-winning goal by Winnick. And you know, the Islanders' only goal in that game was a fluky power play goal by Strome, who, you know, has been, you know, not exactly, you know, great so far. Granted, only four games, but Garth has staked his wagon to Ryan Strome having a big bounce back year. And I don't know if it's happening for him. I mean, it's only four games, so we have to let the season develop, and then we can look at it a little bit closer. But
so to get Barzal or Beauvillier, if that's how you say it, I don't know.
Beauvillier, yes, the French.
Did I say Beauvillier?
I think Beauvillier? So. Yeah. Okay. Yep, the Quebec major junior.
But to get a fair look at those guys, then you have to be sitting one of Quine, Prince, or Bailey.
Yeah, right? And now Prince is on the IR, so Quine took his spot, and we know
who's on IR?
Prince. Prince played the first two games, I think. I think he was in the Washington game, I think.
Oh, and he got injured?
And, yep, he's on IR. So Quine, that's why he took his spot in the lineup on Sunday and tonight.
But so you have to – I mean, to get both these guys in, to have them both playing – I mean, I don't like this alternating thing. How do they get into a rhythm? You know?
Exactly. And that's why I, you know, in this whole, you know, so we want them to get as much experience as possible and meetings.
No, I feel like you're playing games with these guys. I think you just have one down in the minors playing every day and the other up here playing every day. You don't, like, alternate the two of them. It just doesn't seem.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. So they can't go to the minors. So they can only get their 9 games before the first year of their entry level deal would kick in. So it hasn't kicked in yet for either of them. Once they reach the 9 games, then you have to make a decision. But they don't. They can be on the roster the whole year as long as they don't play more than 9 games. And that, and believe it or not, at least I think maybe there may be a stipulation there. But
so a healthy scratch doesn't count as a game.
Right, does not count. So, but they can't go to the minors. They're not old enough. They'd have to go back to their junior teams. So that's the question now. That I don't know what the answer is going to be. I really don't. I have no idea. I mean, I don't like this every other game, or at least it was until Beauvillier, I guess, you know, Barzal committed three penalties, so he gets put in the doghouse, like, or whatever, you know, he gets banished. Yeah, I honestly don't know what the hell they're doing right now. I don't know if they think that they really could be contributors this year, and they really are giving consideration to having one of them stay, because we know it won't be both. I mean, I think Barzal is very talented, and I think if he's put in the right situation and he's coached the right way, but Capuano, you know, you've heard me, of course, everybody's that listens to our program has heard me kind of critique Capuano's coaching abilities just ever so slightly at times, and you know, while he's good at, you know, handling young kids, I don't know if he's necessarily the best guy to get the most out of him. And, you know, you're just seeing how this is, the NHL is turning into a younger players league, and players that earlier and younger, you know, younger ages are having more and more success. I'm not just talking about Austin Matthews, you know, four goal. That was an aberration. I mean, Austin Matthews is going to be a great player, but I'm not basing my opinion off of that. I'm overall, you're seeing how these young players are established, you know, are able to have success much earlier in their careers. They don't have to struggle for a couple of years before they gain their footing like it used to be. And I think Barzal is talented enough. You know, Beauvillier, I honestly don't know enough about him. He looks like he has ability. He doesn't look like he's lost out there. I mean, you know, he, you know, first game struggled a little bit against the Rangers, you know, committed an early penalty, as did Barzal. But I agree with you. I think that the alternating or the one in and then two games for this one and the other one back in, I don't like it. Decide what you want to do. You know, give him a fair evaluation. If you are considering both of them, I like Quine, so I would say Sibeli. Have them both play in the lineup right now. They're not playing great. It's not like they're undefeated, you know, with one of them in, and you don't want to shake up the apple cart. The team looks lifeless, and their offense stinks. And you can't just count on Tavares to carry your offense again. I like the Nelson line with Lee and Chimera. I think that could be a good line. We'll see how that works out. But you can't have your fourth line be your best line.
They're not the fourth line. They're not the fourth line. I think that's
the proverbial fourth line.
But they're not. They are their best.
They have been their best line again.
And they start the games. They start. So clearly they're not. They're on the ice when the puck is dropped. I didn't see tonight if that was the case. I did not catch the first at the puck drop. My guess is they were. But they were on Sunday. And I think they were in Washington.
And you can trust them in all situations. And that's why and that's the thing, is that they are legitimately good hockey players. Kuhlman, he had a bad year last year, but I know he's better than what he was last year. Cizikas and Clutterbuck are legitimate good hockey players. Are they going to score, you know, 60, 70 points? No. But they are legitimate good hockey players. And you're right. They are better than fourth line players. They can play 15 minutes a night, and they will not hurt you. They are good enough.
I didn't realize the Islanders are in the midst of a 5-game homestand here.
Well, remember, the Islanders play 95% of their home games before Christmas. I know we mentioned it last time, nine-game road trip.
Friday they host Arizona, Sunday they host Minnesota, and then Wednesday next week, Montreal. Those are the next three games at home.
Yeah.
And they go at Pittsburgh. That'll be fun.
Sure it will be.
Yeah, so these are, you know, home games. They got to establish their ability to win at home, I think, is a pretty obvious thing to say, and we'll see what happens. All right.
I just want to expand on your point about them not being the fourth line. This Cizikas, Clutterbuck, Kuhlman. So here's their time on ice tonight. 14 minutes and change for Cizikas, 17 minutes and change for Clutterbuck, and 15 minutes and change for Kuhlman. So there you go.
Well, I mean, what is that?
Those are not fourth line minutes. So they
okay. That's the context that you need to provide.
Okay, yes. I'm sorry. Yes. So the meaning that the fourth liners usually will play 10 to 12 minutes in this league top. Some of them will play less. But you know, Strome tonight only 10 minutes. Quine less than 10 minutes. You know, Beauvillier less than 10. So that is your fourth line right now. You know, so the Strome line is your fourth line right now. Yeah. And then second and third.
The guy that the Islanders are looking for a big bounce back from.
Oh, right. And Josh Bailey played 22 minutes. Josh Bailey, save our season.
Yikes.
Oh, man. I don't know.
I don't know if you saw. You probably didn't. I sent out a tweet last night. I'm shifting the subject.
Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. But since you, that reminds me, are you proud of the lip for his Twitters?
Yes.
Some Twitters.
Yeah. So, yes, you're doing great. and you will stay in your rhythm. You'll be taking it to the next level. At some point, doesn't have to be now. You're doing well. Where there's more engagement, but just keep it up for now. Keep up what you're doing. So that's at Hip in the Lip. Those are the Lips tweets. You could find the Hips tweets at TaxDude, TaxDood. So I sent out a tweet last night during the Cleveland-Toronto game four. No, game three. I'm sorry. It was last night. And during the game, because Trevor Bauer had to leave in the first inning because his hand was all, you know, bloody, stitches.
Bleeding all over his arm.
Somehow the Indians still won the game by Terry Francona just doing a magical job with his bullpen, pulling all the, you know, the strings properly to keep the Toronto bats at bay. It was announced during the game who would start game four for Cleveland in game five. So four was, and that was tonight, their ace, Corey Kluber. And then it was announced who the game five starter was. Did you see who the game five starter is?
If you're asking me, like it's, because it's probably somebody that I know.
Do you know who it is? Do you know who it is?
I have not heard. No. So I'm going to guess. Can I guess?
You're, of course.
Okay. Because I don't know. So if you're asking me, it's probably somebody that I know. It's probably somebody that you would not have thought would have been a consideration. Could it possibly be Andrew Miller?
Starting game five. No, it is not Andrew Miller.
Okay. Then I have no idea. I don't know.
It is Ryan Merritt.
I have no idea who that is.
Exactly.
That's... Okay. All right. I thought maybe it was because like he was like really going outside the box by starting Miller.
I'm just getting over a throat thing, and my voice is starting to give out. So Ryan Merritt, and I played fantasy baseball this year, as did you, and not in the shallowest of leagues. So we were paying attention to like players who were pitching well. So I looked it up. I'd never heard of Ryan Merritt. He's had one career Major League Baseball start and 11 total career innings pitched in his career. And he's starting game five against Toronto. This is how desperate the Indians are for pitching, and yet somehow they're one win away of being in the World Series. It is just an incredible, incredible achievement that they've gotten to this point.
It is, but Francona, let's hope he didn't outthink himself by starting Kluber tonight, because he could have had him on full rest tomorrow, you know, if they do lose today. And let's hope, because Francona has managed brilliantly in the whole playoffs. I mean, he has pushed every right button with that team. He has gotten them as much, he has maximized, you know, every last bit, you know, that you can possibly get out of a baseball team. And it is. He's done a fabulous job. Andrew Miller has been absolutely sensational. I mean, have you seen his? I mean, no runs, nine innings, no runs, 20 strikeouts. Miller, who of course was traded from the Yankees, as we talked about the trade deadline. Oh my God, has Miller been amazing?
Oh
my God. Oh, he's even been better than Aroldis Chapman. Oh yes,
indeed.
But they are one game away. But let's. They may put a scare into them, Toronto. Let's see.
I mean, if there's any offense,
Ryan Merritt.
Ryan Merritt starting game five for Cleveland.
God.
And it looks like the Dodgers are up 5-0 in the bottom of the eighth. So, barring some miraculous comeback from the Cubs,
unbelievable.
LA, the Dodgers are going to take a 2-1 series lead there. So that which is, you know, look, it's 2-1. That might be headed for seven games.
And I made a note of this. Oh, there's going to be so much pressure on the Cubs tomorrow. They are going to have a ton of pressure on them, because they are staring Kershaw in the face potentially for game five if they lose tomorrow.
And, you know, Arrieta letting up 4 runs in 5 innings, 2 homers.
One was a solo shot
to Justin Turner. The other was, I think, a 2-run shot
from Rondall.
Yep. Oh, Rich Hill, though. My gosh. 36 years old and 6 shutout
innings.
Former Cub.
I mean, the former Cub, yes.
This guy, God. Rich Hill, incredible. He missed so much of this year because of a blister. But when he is able to pitch, he doesn't top 87 miles an hour, but he has this ridiculous curveball that you just can't. And he throws it for strikes. And so when he comes back with the fastball, you can't just. They can't catch up with it.
6-0.
Sixth time.
Yep. And how about this? How about this though? The only Cubs that have hit in this playoffs is Bryant and Baez, who are doing everything they can to carry that team. Two more hits for Bryant tonight, and this is before this game. So this is before this game. I know all these players. I'm pretty sure all these players are hitless. So Rizzo, Hayward, Russell, Fowler, Zobrist. Pretty good names. Pretty good players. Combined 12 for 109. In the playoffs. That's good for a 1-10 clip.
Ouch.
How about that?
Hayward's been bad all year, so...
We both had him. The amazing Jason. $184 million, dollars, right? Wasn't that what it was? 100, right? Was
incredible that? Contract. Incredible contract. He's getting,
oh, my God.
Russell's been... He's been better than he was last year. It hasn't been great, but the other guys, Fowler's kind of streaky, but Zobrist and Rizzo, I mean, those are staples in your lineup. So
yeah, and so Zobrist had a great was great last year for Kansas City, and Rizzo's an MVP candidate.
Yep. No.
That is amazing. I mean, and like I said, if they lose, and it looks like they're going to lose this game. If they lose tomorrow, they are staring Kershaw in the face.
Lackey against Julio. Urias. Yeah,
yep,
I mean,
the 19-year-old Cuban.
He's like 18 years old or 19. I mean, this 19, guy.
Yep.
Incredible.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Okay, Fowler has a hit tonight. Fowler does have a hit, so that means you can add one. But Zobrist, Rizzo, Hayward, who got a pinch hit tonight, all hitless in this game. So you can lower that average all from right, one, maybe to like 109 or 108.
There's some good baseball, you know. Watching Ryan Merritt try to close out the Blue Jays is kind of interesting.
I'm into it too. In the Cubs bandwagon, I'm not. Yeah.
Tomorrow at 4 o'clock.
I love Kershaw. I think Kershaw. I can't stand all the nonsense about his postseason, numbers and he's not a big game pitcher. I just want to see Kershaw have like a Baumgartner like Herculean effort and lead Dodgers to the World Series.
Completely shut down the Cubs on Sunday.
He did. Yep, pitched brilliant. Yeah. 7 innings, no runs. They scored 1 run. So I mean, no margin for error for the great, phenomenal, maybe the best pitcher of the last 50 years. Maybe since Sandy Koufax, maybe best pitcher since Sandy, and wearing a Dodge uniform, of course, is Kershaw, as did Sandy. And let's see if he can carry that team. And it's obviously they're getting contributions from other guys, and it's unbelievable though to see what that Dodger team is doing, especially with the very heavily favored Cubs. Everybody's America's darlings. Everybody wants to see the Cubs do it. Oh,
yeah,
it's
been so Theo.
Oh, that's right, Theo. Right. Another. Let's cut to Bill Murray again. Oh, let's cut to Bill Murray. Another base hit. Oh, look at Bill Murray cheer. Oh, I'm so happy for Bill Murray. Look at him. Oh.
Why is that? I mean, it's just because he's a Cubs fan.
Yeah. Well, I guess all so.
Right. So I'm prepared to close this out with the hipster.
All right. Yeah, that's all I'd like to introduce you. Wait, I have to introduce you. Coming up, everybody, and right now, the hipster beer of the week. Take it away, Mr. Hip.
So for the not the immediately prior episode, but the two episodes immediately before that, which would be episodes 30 and 31, the hipster beers of the week were based off of beers whose breweries I had gone to that week. Last week, the streak ended, but we start a new streak this week.
All right. Because I went to
a brewery that's 7 blocks south of Barclays. I did not even know it was that close to it.
What brewery would this be? Yes.
Threes. Threes Brewery.
Threes Company 2?
Huh?
I said Threes Company 2? Three's Company 2, come and knock on our door. John Ritter and the other, and the dancing blonde.
No,
and brunette.
Hopefully somebody else knows that one.
We've been waiting. Oh, come on, Three's Company? I mean, it was before our time, but the theme song at least, right? Come and knock on our door.
I do not.
Well, you can watch it on TV Land. If you ever, that's kind of H, actually. You pick it up on TV Land.
Well, I used to watch the original MacGyver on TV Land.
That's right. Have you watched, I know we're getting away. We have to get the hipster beer to week, but have you watched the new MacGyver? What are your thoughts? Because I know how big
of a
MacGyver fan.
I've watched every episode.
Amazing. Richard Dean Anderson?
It's just not the same. I mean, anybody expecting, you know, something similar to the cheesy but smooth, you know, Richard Dean Anderson, MacGyver of the 80s, you're not going to get it. It's, you know, a slicker, a little more outwardly cocky, but not in a charming way. Younger MacGyver. And, you know, it's because it's 2016, it has that, you know, like, you know, with 24 and like the text, like they'll put across the screen with like where they are, what time it is, and the music those like modern touches to it.
It doesn't have the same feel like the 1980s and early 90s.
Right, and there's this chick character who's like a super genius with cracking code. Like, even though you don't really see what she does, she just does it. Like computer code. It's not bad. As a standalone, it's not that bad. It's not.
All right. Well, answer me this. Does MacGyver still foil, you know, criminals' plots to take over the world or whatever they do?
Yes.
Does he still foil them with a paperclip, a piece of string, a rubber band, and a stapler? Does he still use?
Yes. at its core, they still get to that. Yes.
Don't thank me. Thank the Earth's gravitational pull.
I just hope that they, what they do is incorporate. I want them to build up the villains better. Like as of right now, it's just a random like actor that's trying to detonate a bomb in some country. You know,
well, does he slip that guy Jack as his sidekick? Is that guy back, or is there a
different guy? Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Jack Dalton is his sidekick. That's right, Jack in every Dalton. Episode.
That's right.
But I think we need to feel more of a threat. Right now, they're randomly defeating like different terrorists or otherwise. There has to be like somebody who they think they took care of who like reappears and, you know, like, I mean, at the end of the day, you know that MacGyver's not going to die during the show.
Yeah.
But at least with the old show, in a way, you still felt like he was threatened.
Yeah.
There hasn't been much of that in this, and there's a lot more gunfire in this. There was some guns in the old show, but it was here and there, and MacGyver would never even touch a gun if his life depended on it in the old show. But in the new one,
he was so resourceful. I mean, MacGyver.
And they do that. They're consistent with that here, but everyone else is just, you know, firing away like. Yeah. All around, and it's a little overkill. It's not bad though.
MacGyver, you foiled the criminal's plot again, and you did it all within 46 minutes. Oh, you're so consistent, MacGyver.
But that's what like the cheesiness of it is what made it entertaining, right? Now it's more okay. You know he's gonna do it. It's just, you know, you feel too comfortable watching this. There's no real. I think they need to kill off somebody that's close. Like one of the, like not MacGyver, but somebody that's close. I don't know. You have to feel like something bad could happen at any time. You just never feel that. Anyway.
All right. Back to the hipster beer of the week.
Yeah, right. So there's a brewery called Threes, Threes.
All right.
You can find their stuff on tap in the New York City area, some cans. One of the better known breweries in the New York City area and a pretty chill spot just to go hang out because they have a full kitchen. They actually serve other breweries' beers there. They have bottles and on draft, which I thought was interesting. All the other breweries I've been to that I can recall would only serve their beer. Threes Brewing does not. They also had a backyard like area with maybe like 30 tables or so, and it was, you know, Sunday was a nice day, so hung out outside for like an hour before the game and had tried out a couple of their beers. This one is called Chronic Myopia, and I did get a 4-pack which is cool that you could just buy to go. It's an IPA, pineapple, green papaya, pine candy, mild bitterness, dry finish, rated over 4 on Untappd.
That's so, a pretty good rating there.
Good rating, good beer. Check it out. And that's a wrap. So we'll see you next week. be some more, you know, new Odell Beckham storyline, I'm sure. And the Jets be using Geno Smith after they lose to Baltimore. And is Josh Bailey still getting 22 minutes?
And will the Islanders have more losses than the Jets by next week? Stay tuned.
So there are your questions. We'll have answers. We're hipping the lip. All right, bye. Bye.
All right. Bye. All right. Bye. All right. Bye. 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 Bye.
Next.
Next.
Next. WGS.